WBAI.org. If you missed any of First Voices with Teokas and Ghost Source, it'll be on WBAI.org in about 5 or 10 minutes. Coming up now is Ecologic. So, you know, it's Climate Week. You know, that's what we'll be talking about.
Oh, people, people, don't you love this earth? We share with everything that grows. Don't you want to taste freedom, peace in this life? I believe we can make it whole again. I believe we can make it whole.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on following,
see a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Donna Stein.
And this is Ecologic for September 24th, 2019, here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. When your air or water is clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
The WBAI fund drive is over, but you can still help WBAI and Ecologic by going to www.give2wbai.org. Type eco-logic into the search box at www.give2wbai.org. Coming up today, news and announcements, false equivalencies, floating Russian power plant, say what?
Nuclear power plant.
What'd I say? Oh, yes. Rally tomorrow morning, 16-year-old Greta Thunberg at the UN, and 13-year-old Marisol Rivera in New York City.
A friend of mine, who is an environmentalist, heard on TV that the tropical rainforests do not supply one-fourth of the world's oxygen. The TV guy said that the compost on the rainforest floor gives off carbon dioxide, which is indeed a greenhouse gas, and greenhouse gases are indeed a major cause of the global warming part of climate change. The TV guy was trying to be contrary about the tropical rainforest being so important to all life on Earth, hinting that the fires in Brazil are no big deal, and also proving that a little bit of knowledge can be worse than no knowledge at all. Yes, rainforests are a net producer of oxygen, about one-fourth of all oxygen on Earth. The oceans give us about half. The rest of Earth combined is the other one-fourth. That's the science. We seem to be living in an age of false equivalencies. Some people are in favor of separating children from their parents at the border, and some people are not. So the two must be equal. They are not. But that's how mainstream corporate press does things. Compost gives off carbon dioxide, and plants give off oxygen. So the two amounts must be the same. They are not. Plants breathe in oxygen at night and breathe out carbon dioxide, while during the day, they do the opposite. So the two must be equal. They are not. If that equivalency held logic, every election would end up in a tie, and they do not.
A study by Columbia University found that biodiversity is better than biomass when it comes to things like absorbing carbon dioxide and giving oxygen. The working theory at the time was that biodiversity above ground means a greater biodiversity below ground of microbes. Microbes in the soil make plants more efficient, just as they do in our own bodies. Plants will grow in sterile soil, but they grow much better in non-sterile soil. We will do a whole episode of Ecologic about it sometime in the future. Stay tuned. A tree 100 feet tall, covered in vines, with plants at the top called epiphyte plants, is giving off more oxygen than a thin layer of humus is giving off carbon dioxide. Humus is things like decaying dead leaves that help create and fertilize soil. Most of the carbon in the humus becomes more plant material. Humus helps plants grow. The plants of an ecosystem give off more oxygen than animals consume.
That's why the atmosphere has more oxygen than it has carbon dioxide. It's why our bodies, for example, which only use one-fifth of the oxygen we breathe in, get more than enough oxygen than we need and exhale the rest, and that one-fifth is why mouth-to-mouth resuscitation works. And just because we exhale carbon dioxide doesn't mean burning fuel to put more of it in the air is a good idea. It is not. So, enough of these false equivalencies and TV hosts thinking they know more than scientists. Oh, and thanks to the Yorkville Writers Circle for their input in that.
Russia has constructed a floating nuclear power plant. Who thought of that? An article in the Barron's Observer earlier this month said that the nuke was tested and to be towed to coastal facilities in Pevek. It's replacing two land-based nuclear plants. As Sally Gellert said, what could possibly go wrong? Arctic sea ice has been melting at accelerated levels for years. Nuclear power plants create so much waste heat, which has only recently started being measured, that you can be sure that some of the Arctic sea ice melting is due to nuclear power plants along the Arctic shore in Russia. Besides the intense changes to climate, especially winter weather, the absence of Arctic Ocean sea ice will speed up the pace of changes to climate, especially winter weather. In the absence of Arctic Ocean sea ice will speed up, I'm all right, will speed up, with, this was going to speed up the pace of Greenland glaciers flowing to the sea. That pace is already at record speed. Greenland ice is going from land to sea is a major cause of sea level rise worldwide. All the world's oceans are connected. Think about when you go into a bathtub. The water level goes up in the entire tub, not just where you entered it. That's how glaciers in Greenland and Antarctica going into the oceans raise sea levels everywhere.
Rise and Resist is having a rally tomorrow morning where various corporate and government leaders are meeting at the Plaza Hotel, 59th Street and 5th Avenue, 8 to 9 a.m. So that's the Plaza Hotel, 59th Street and 5th Avenue, tomorrow, 8 to 9 a.m. The rest of today's news is in the form of sound. News outlets generally played only 1 or 2 minutes of Greta Thunberg's speech to the United Nations on Monday. We'll play over 4 minutes of it, the whole thing. Plus, 13-year-old Marisol Rivera spoke on Howard Jordan's program, Jordan Journal, this past Friday. She is more eloquent and with a greater scope on climate change than some people who have been active longer than she's been alive. The whole Jordan Journal was on climate and was excellent from 3 to 5 p.m. Friday the 20th. Go to WBAI.org and listen to the whole show on the archives. We'll give you a direct link on the EcoLinks page. We also link to the conversations on the environment that I had with listeners from 7 to 9 p.m. on Friday. That link is on Ecolinks also.
On the next Ecologic, Charlie Olson is working on something to surprise all of us. Sounds good, Charlie. Environment TV airs on Manhattan Community Network two Sundays after Ecologic airs and is often a video version of Ecologic. Watch Environment TV at 11 a.m. every other Sunday on MNN. Charlie Olson adds great graphics. If you miss any WBAI show, it'll be on the WBAI.org archives 5 or 10 minutes after the show ends. To read the full articles we summarize on any episode of Ecologic from the past few years, we link to all those articles on the Ecolinks page of the Ecologic website. That's www.ecoradio.org, ecoradio.org. Our Facebook page is WBAI Ecologic, no spaces or dashes, WBAI Ecologic, and please click like. For more environmental news, go to the Environment TV, biologicaldiversity.org, or ecowatch.com. www.ecoradio.org is the main Ecologic page and will get you to the past guest page, the Ecolinks page, and our own permanent archives. That's ecoradio.org.
And Charlie Olson at Environment TV has something to add.
Yes, let's see. I'm Charlie Olson. I'm part of the Ecologic Collective and co-founder of the Environment TV. And as many listeners are aware of, we have an Ecologic television component. Well, we'd like to expand and grow, but we need your help to do that. And I've already been talking to one of our guests tonight if she would like to join us, because she does some videoing at the new school and elsewhere. But we could use more people to expand and to grow. So we need people that equal partners in this, not just people, but people who are equal partners. And the work would be in research. It would be video as well as camera work within the studios and outside the studios. We'll explain more as we get people to contact us. And you can contact us through the Ecologic link here, or can I give a phone number for people? You can call directly to the Environment TV's phone number, which is 718-650-1364. That's 718-650-1364.
And one thing we always need is editors.
Oh, editors, yes, but that's technical. The research part is probably something that everybody in the general public can help with, and that's the collection of links, the correct spelling of people's names, beautiful pictures, statistics, graphics that we can show and put into our television view of Ecologic. And thank you very much.
All right, Charlie Olson from Environment TV. And so now I will play what Greta said to every government in the world at the United Nations yesterday.
My message is that we'll be watching you. This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. And yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away? And come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight. You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency. But no matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and that I refuse to believe. The popular idea of cutting our emissions in half in 10 years only gives us a 50% chance of staying below 1.5 degrees and the risk of setting off irreversible chain reactions beyond human control. 50% may be acceptable to you, but those numbers do not include tipping points, most feedback loops, additional warming hidden by toxic air pollution, or the aspects of equity and climate justice. They also rely on my generation sucking hundreds of billions of tons of your CO2 out of the air with technologies that barely exist. So a 50% risk is simply not acceptable to us, we who have to live with the consequences. To have a 67% chance of staying below a 1.5 degrees of global temperature rise, the best odds given by the IPCC, the world had 420 gigatons of CO2 left to emit back on January 1st, 2018. Today, that figure is already down to less than 350 gigatons. How dare you pretend that this can be solved with just business as usual and some technical solutions? With today's emissions levels, that remaining CO2 budget will be entirely gone within less than 8.5 years. There will not be any solutions or plans presented in line with these figures here today, because these numbers are too uncomfortable and you are still not mature enough to tell it like it is. You are failing us, but the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you choose to fail us, I say we will never forgive you. We will not let you get away with this. Right here, right now, is where we draw the line. The world is waking up, and change is coming, whether you like it or not. Thank you.
Greta Thunberg, 16-year-old from Sweden, speaking at the United Nations yesterday. And Friday at the climate strike was a absolutely wonderful 13-year-old named Marisol Rivera. She was on Howard Jordan's show on Friday between 4 and 4:30 for quite a while. I'm only going to give you 3 minutes of it. You'll have to go to the archives to hear the rest. But she is wonderful. And so let you hear it.
Marisol, yes, give us a report from a 13-year-old view on climate change. Share with us your thinking.
I got into climate change when I was 7 years old.
Wow.
Because of Hurricane Sandy. Basically, I watched my home be destroyed in a matter of seconds, and that pretty much opened up my eyes, and it turned the gears for me, and it made me want to make the world better and try to put an end to climate change. That everybody needs to be a part of the solution. Everybody needs to be able to agree. Everybody just needs to be able to understand that we need to put the end to this and that they need to be part of the solution for it to happen.
How do you see that among, you know, because there are a lot of people like myself that are animal lovers, and we see that and we see all these species going extinct. Is that an issue that resonates with younger people, or is it more the question of, you know, toxic dumping, fossil fuels, the right to breathe, and as opposed to the animal extinction ideas?
Animal extinction does have something to do with this, because that an animal's habitat is very important, and we destroy our animal's habitat every day, whether it's by building a new building, whether it's by opening a fossil fuel corporation, whether it's by drilling holes in the ground. We are taking away an animal's habitat every day, and half of the animals more than half of the animals are going extinct, and it does need to stop, because it is causing a dramatic change. And right now, as we speak, we have the Amazon rainforest burning due to climate change. So that would be millions of animals losing their habitat, along with indigenous people who live on that land naturally.
Wow. What do your friends say when they see you active? First, are your friends active in the climate change movement? Or how do your friends in school look at what you do when you do these kind of things? Do they join you? They think, do they have an interest in this? Or do a lot of them they have other things to worry about at 13?
It's a mix of both because, at 13, especially in the generation that we're in now, it does come with more responsibilities than it did back then. It does come with more stress than it did back then, and does come with school being more complicated, and it does come with also more problems to deal with. So it's a mixture of both, because while other 13-year-olds are also dealing with their own personal problems, there's some 13-year-olds or other people my age being an activist.
And that was Marisol Rivera, a 13-year-old from the climate strike on Friday. And I should mention that along with Marisol on Howard's show was her mom, Rachel. And you can see why Marisol is such an incredible 13-year-old, because she's got an incredible mom. Yeah, it really gives me sort of some hope for the future to hear people like that, and to hear people like our guest today. You're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale.
And Donna Stein here.
And we are with?
Emily Dosal. Hi.
And you are, what is your group?
So I'm a part of This Is Zero Hour, which is a nationwide organization that's youth-led completely. I'm a part of the NYC chapter, and we really focus not only on the scientific facts, but the decolonization project and how climate justice intertwines with every form of injustice.
For example,
ecofeminism, so women's rights and women equality, quote-unquote, like minority communities, really everything, racial injustice, gender inequality, indigenous injustices, indigenous violence. So we believe in promoting not only the facts and cleaning up your city or wherever you live, but also paying attention to the people around you and what they're going through, because it literally everything interconnects.
What are some of the things that Zero Hour has done in New York City?
So we participated in the march in March, and we had a coffee house fundraiser last spring. We were at the September 20th strike as well. So we've definitely been all around the city. Actually, this past Saturday after the strike, we hosted a sustainability workshop at the Our Future Festival on Governor's Island. So we worked with middle school students and taught them about sustainability at school, bringing a lunchbox, reusable utensils. So really it comes down to all of the details, macro to micro. So we're all over the place.
Are you more oriented toward individual choices or policy changes or a combination of both?
It's both. I think both have equal gravity because obviously this is a crisis and every single person has to participate regardless. So what we do as individuals is going to climb the ladder, per se, up to policymakers. I mean, Greta Thunberg. You look at Greta Thunberg and what she's done and how much attention she's brought. But it's not just her. You know, I think she gets a lot of credit, and rightfully so. But there are teenagers like Greta all over the country, and there are people who have been fighting for decades on this. You know, Exxon knew that this was happening in the late 80s. So there definitely obviously have been people have been aware of this. And, you know, every single person counts. There's no excuse. There's no time. We believe in individual action. We teach about individual action. We want to localize and be a part of our community, but we also want to focus on the bigger things, you know, i.e. the UN.
What's going on at the UN right now, and how would you, I don't want to say rate it, but what do you think it'll do us any good?
It's not enough. It's not enough. Yeah. There's been a lot of talk, which I also agree with, that three of the biggest countries with CO2 emissions, the United States, India, and China, didn't really say anything. They just didn't really have a comment. Definitely, I mean, you look at countries like Norway and parts of Africa that are absolutely putting their foot in, but they're not the ones who are emitting as much CO2. I still think the voice that we need, the United States, isn't coming clear, isn't, you know, there's not enough being done. So I think, yes, you know, we have these speeches, we have these moments of power, but it's not reaching the right people. And there is still this sense of denial. It's not that bad. It's exaggerated. This push is only the beginning. And I think in terms of the UN climate summit, there was really good and bad. I think the Green Climate Fund, you know, and attention to that was really good. I think 70 plus countries getting tougher on NDCs.
NDCs are?
Drugs. Pretty sure I have it in my notes, but
all know that
it's a lot.
All you have to do is follow the money.
Yeah, exactly.
The larger countries worry about their profits. India worries about their profits with energy, energy profits. China, U.S. We need to change the systems.
What? I always think of there was a green and blue conference where unions and environmental groups were working together because there's a lot of very environmentally oriented unions out there.
Yeah.
And they wanted to make sure that, one, people knew that labor was with us, and that they wanted input from environmental groups. And it was a wonderful conference.
It's amazing.
Some of the leadership was kind of a little more laid back than they should have been. Mm. But they had speakers from all over the world. And there was a woman from Spain who said that when they were switching over to renewable energy, they're like, you know, what's the point? Mm-hmm. Right? We're Spain. We don't put out that much carbon anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can stop breathing and stop doing everything, and it won't affect the atmosphere because of what the United States is doing.
Right.
And the Green Party of Spain is saying, no, you do it because it's the right thing to do. So they started converting to renewable energy there. And they found out that if you don't export your jobs to the Middle East and Texas, renewable energy is done locally. So suddenly they had more employment. Mm. So that was benefiting the country and benefiting the bottom line of the country. Secondly, they have national health. And when you're not polluting the air and water, your health care costs go down because your water and air are healthier. So the government is spending less money, and people are spending less money, and there's more jobs. And they say, wow, if the United States did that, imagine what it would do for the world.
Absolutely.
And it would benefit the United States. And what U.S. policy is sacrificing basically all the people of the United States for a handful of people who make money with oil companies.
Yeah, and I also want to add, I think there's absolutely a skepticism in U.S. government. I think there's a skepticism towards not only generating profit, but losing profit. Like, what if we're putting money into this, if we're investing into this, what's going to happen to us? What if it's not true? What if the statistics aren't as true as people are saying they are and we lose money? What if people are taking advantage of this? There's definitely a lack of trust. And I think, you know, in terms of what Spain is doing, you know, there is no time to have a relaxed attitude, regardless of CO2 emissions. Like we were saying, every individual counts. And I think that will eventually build trust, because I think obviously if enough people are doing this, the government's going to have to adjust and start fixing their policies because people are demanding it. And if they don't, well, like, it's what Greta said, we're kind of screwed.
Yeah, well, while Spain was switching to renewable energy, so was Portugal right next door.
Yeah, well, Europe
is Portugal is almost 100% renewable energy now. They're pretty much not contributing anything to the climate crisis. And, you know, Costa Rica's doing it. And, of course, the Scandinavian countries are on their way to 100%.
Right.
The Netherlands and Germany are on their way to 100%. I mean, there are... I mean, it's going on. New York State saved 5,000 megawatts of electricity between 2007 and 2017.
Isn't the myth that the U.S. is a world leader? We're lagging behind.
We are lagging behind.
Absolutely.
You know, the 5,000 megawatts that New York State saved is enough to power 1 million homes. And that's basically the equivalent of 1 million homes getting free electricity. And that was all done grassroots. It's all individuals getting Energy Star appliances and insulating their homes and getting better light bulbs and better windows and putting up solar panels. The New York Independent System Operator said it was a combination of solar panels and energy efficiency.
And solar panels are so much cheaper than they used to be. You get tax breaks. So even though they're still expensive, like I use the word cheap carefully, they're absolutely cheaper overall, and it's just become so much more accessible to be sustainable.
And when people say there's a payback rate to solar, what that means is that after a few years, all the electricity you get is free.
Right.
Right? No, fossil fuel never has a payback rate because it's never free. Solar energy, once you pay for the panels, your electricity is free from then on. And, you know, isn't that cool?
And the home resale prices are higher.
Unless you use a solar lease, then there's a problem. But if you own the panels on your home, your resale rate is better and the amount of money you get for your home is greater. You're not spending money on... not only do you have money in your pocket, you're not giving it to the utilities. Now, isn't that cool?
Right.
And that's an argument for Passive House, too, but that's another show.
it's this show because Passive House is a building that uses so little energy that you can heat it in an Illinois winter, for example, with the heat from the people and the appliances in that building. And that's been going on since the 70s.
Wow.
So, you know, all the solutions have been here with us all along.
Of course.
And you have government getting in the way of the solutions instead of trying to encourage them and promote them.
By the way, I spoke to a young architect named Jethro at the climate strike the other day, and he said that he knew Chris Benedict, and he knew about Passive Houses, but he said that his people want to save money and he can't talk them into spending the extra money for Passive House. So I gave him all the arguments why in the long run they're going to make more money because the resale value and people will want to buy their houses because
their monthly expenses are lower. Yeah. And it's interesting in that because a lot of people are saying Passive House costs more to build, but Chris Benedict does it for the same price. And she does not take 1 cent of grants. She said if you need a grant to pay for making house energy efficient, then it's not the same cost as a regular house. And so she's got 80 buildings in New York that did not cost 1 cent more to build. When I asked at a building energy conference, when they said, oh, it costs more, I said, well, how come Chris Benedict can do for the same price or less? And their answer was, not everybody has Chris Benedict's talent. But anyway, back to what Zero Hour does. Ecofeminism. I had a nice chat with an ecofeminist organization at Governor's Island. This organization has been around since 1990, connecting environmental issues and feminist issues. And yet, not too many people know about this connection. So.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, a lot of labor in the global south is women, and a lot of them don't get paid equally, obviously, and are working in terrible conditions, which are thus emitting CO2 emissions, using a lot of plastic material, cheap materials. So women's labor and the treatment of women and the inequality of women economically is extremely expensive, not at all sustainable, and absolutely contributing. I mean, we're talking about like thousands and millions of people who are working for basically nothing, have been working for basically nothing, including children in parts of the South and East. And all of that contributes to, obviously, the pollution. I mean, we look at India, for example. Well, like I said, I think it's the usage of materials. I think plastic, cheap fabrics, factory conditions, working environment conditions, and also just the fact that it's affecting familial health and healthcare and lack of access to healthcare. So not only are women working in cheap labor in horrible conditions, but they're not getting the proper healthcare that they need. They're not getting support from their government. So we're talking, you know, half the population of these countries who are not benefiting. And yeah, I think it completely adds to the entire system. I think it's just one step after another.
And so you kind of slid right into environmental justice there.
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely kind of connect, for sure. Not kind of, but...
Yeah. So I invited an environmental justice group here tonight, and they didn't make it. So you'll have to speak for them. So let's talk about environmental justice and what it is.
Well, environmental justice is kind of what it states. It's not only the saving of our environment, but the maintenance of our environment and the emphasis on not only like political and social action, but economic action and making sure that we're not only reducing emissions now and not only finding new technological solutions now, but sustaining it and living sustainably and making sustainability a part of the law. It's a fundamental change in consciousness. It's a fundamental change in government. And it's the realization that the earth does not need us. We need the earth. So it's a matter of justice for every environment in the world. Like you said, all of the oceans connect, so none of us escape it. I mean, to sum up environmental justice, I could go on and on.
One of the points of environmental justice, because there are people who think that environmental activism is a white issue, despite the fact that pollution sources are put in black and brown neighborhoods.
Right, it's a global issue.
And
huge in minority
And of course the white people ignore the pollution sources if they're in black and brown neighborhoods. That pollution is getting into the air and it's getting into the water and it's getting into everybody's air and everybody's water. But the people on the front lines are those black and brown communities.
Absolutely.
And that's where environmental justice comes in.
And oftentimes the people in the communities that are poor are not able to fight and protest. A good example is right now we've been having the shows on the East River Resiliency Project. They're willing to bulldoze, literally, the East River Park in order to really improve the park so that they can build more expensive real estate, I'm sure, and take away from the community. It's just, you know, join East River Resiliency organizations, please.
Absolutely. And another note on like global outreach and the fact that communities cannot always fight back. The good thing about Zero Hour is that we have become a global organization. We have chapters all over the world in almost every continent. So people are doing absolutely what they can. And I think it's speakers like Greta and organizations like ours that give people the tools that they need to find their voice and to use it.
Yeah, it's interesting how many different youth-oriented organizations have sprung up in the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, the organizations that already existed did not meet the needs of the young people. They were acting slowly.
Absolutely.
Some of them were more interested in getting grants from the very corporations they were fighting.
It's a little relaxed.
I don't want to name any one of them because I'll leave out so many. But the point is that when I was in my 20s and I was just becoming an activist, I noticed that some groups were people my age and had nobody like over 30 in the group. And if somebody was close to 30, they were like the oldest person in the group. Mm. And then I would go to an organization that was almost all people over 40 and you know, a lot of retired people. And each group was wondering where the other group was. Mm. You know, we were wondering, where were all the people who were active in Vietnam? Why aren't they, you know, active now? And the people who are older, like, how come young people don't care about the environment anymore? Mm. So people tend to be more comfortable fighting injustice with people their own age, mm. which I don't quite understand why that is, but it's obviously been true probably forever.
Yeah,
don't get me started on that, because we're you know, I'm a clear-worded person, and we're always trying to, older organizations have been around for 50 years,
yeah.
founded by the greatest environmentalist, one of the greatest environmentalists ever, Pete Seeger, mm. are aging out.
Yeah.
And we're, fortunately, we are attracting some young people, but why not merge some of these new younger organizations and people in them and come in and build on an organization mm. that is founded by an amazing human being
yeah.
and has great work, does great work to clean up the Hudson River mm. and we really amazing. Could use all yeah. of you. Let's mm. merge. Let's have a
yeah, absolutely.
Let's you know, we have I'm also with Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, the large organization, and New York City Friends of Clearwater.
Yeah.
We invite all young people to come on the third Friday of every month to Judson Memorial Church at 6:30 for a potluck, environmental discussion, and music. And mm. okay, that's my last.
And you're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. We're here every other Tuesday from 8 to 9. We alternate with Green Street, so there's always an environmental show at from 8 to 9 on a Tuesday. I'm Ken Gale.
Donna Stein.
Emily Dosal.
And the other thing that I like, there's a lot of well-established environmental groups in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And they almost never work with each other.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre. It's they're you know, the way I see it, and go ahead, just come out, contact me, disagree with me. They are fighting for a bigger piece of the pie that exists
yeah.
rather than growing the pie and be bigger and bigger so that everybody grows and everybody mm. gets learns about how to fight for a better
right.
environmental future. What I've noticed about the youth groups that are springing on lately is that I'll see a flyer for an event, and it lists all of them. There's much more networking going on between the youth-oriented environmental groups.
Mm-hmm.
I sure hope that stays,
yeah.
that kind of networking. I have a niece in Maryland who complains that there's nobody my age that go to her groups, that they would like that wisdom.
Absolutely.
And so just as Donna was asking young people to go to a Clearwater meeting, well, you know, older people should go to zero-hour meetings.
Absolutely. Yeah. We welcome you, and we want to work with, you know, the whole reason we're even doing this is just because we're reaching out. We're saying we need you.
Closer to the mic.
No.
Well, actually, name some of the groups that you do network with.
So we actually just recently got in contact with a group called Earthstrike. They're not really as much of a youth group, but it's more mixed, so that's really great. They actually have an event on September 27th at Sunset Park. Other youth groups, honestly, we've just really been in contact with, like, actually older groups now that I'm thinking about it. We've been in contact with Sunrise.
Yeah,
Little
Sunrise.
Miss Flint was at the Miami Climate Summit, which I volunteered at as well. There were a lot of just kind of not really youth organizations, but just youth that showed up. We've worked with, like, local food distributors for, like, local food, like farm-grown food.
Mm.
But yeah, I think a lot of, like, the interconnecting comes with, like, Earthstrike or just individual activists that reach out to us and connect with us on social media and eventually join us as well. And of course, we work with our own chapters, but that's so global.
What about Extinction Rebellion?
Extinction Rebellion, mm-hmm. yes. We do work with Extinction Rebellion. They were at the Miami Climate Summit as well. They're fantastic.
And
I
mean, attract all ages.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. No, that's like a completely diverse group. I admire like what they're doing in London, what they're doing here in D.C. Yeah, so we've networked with all of them, and it's great. Like, the more people from other generations than us, the better, because we need each other. This is like a global movement. There's no like, and I think the reason why youth connect so well is obviously we have the tools of social media now. We all know how to use Instagram. We're all on Instagram. That's the platform we use all the time, Twitter, Snapchat. And also just the fact that it's so urgent, and that because we're so young, a lot of them aren't even in college yet. I'm in college as an undergrad. I haven't even graduated yet. We need the platform of older people. We need people who are working jobs, who are in offices, who are making laws. It can't be one without the other. And I just think the reason we communicate so well is not only because we know the language of social media, but also because we can relate to each other through this, and we can reach out to our parents and our teachers and, you know, anybody, people that work with our parents. We need to build a bigger basis. So
when's your next meeting?
Our next meeting, so we do weekly phone calls. We're calling on Thursday night, and it's usually about 40 minutes. And then we plan to do a cleanup the weekend of October 5th. We have yet to decide where. I was thinking maybe like around Jamaica Bay, Rockaway Park, or one of the piers in Manhattan. We haven't decided yet, but we're going to talk about that on Thursday.
And that's what, and Pete Seeger championed that. He himself, here he is, this famous legendary folk singer, and he would go and on the coastlines and just pick up garbage with a bag.
Absolutely.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Can anybody get involved in these phone calls on Thursdays?
Well, they're for the chapter, but if you'd like to join the chapter, we're absolutely open to it. Like, all you really have to do is contact Rachel Lee, who's like our leader, like part of the leadership team, Juliana, who's part of the leadership team, really just, or myself, you can like shoot me an email, call me, text me, anything. And we are so open to working with anybody, like whoever wants. So really, yes.
So give an email address or whatever.
Yeah. So my email address is all lowercase emily.dosal, D-O-S-A-L, 314@gmail.com. And my phone number is 954-895-5216. Contact me at any time. We are always open to working with you. We are actually quite a small chapter at the moment. We have about 15 people. So we're so open to collaboration. We're so open to new members. So
give that email address and phone number again.
So it's all lowercase, Emily, E-M-I-L-Y, dot Dosal, D-O-S-A-L, 314@gmail.com. And my phone number is 954-895-5216.
Do you reach out to environmental groups in high schools?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Actually, we were just in contact with a high school in the Bronx for a summit, that like a mini summit / like workshop / seminar event that we want to do. So we haven't directly worked with like a high school club necessarily, but we are absolutely open and have been in contact with NYU, the New School. We'd love to collaborate with the New School and this high school in the Bronx that wants to host us. So I'd love to see it go from there. Absolutely.
Well, we have a few minutes to take your phone calls here at 212-209-2877. And talk to Emily Dosal from Zero Hour, and talk about, and if you were there on Friday and want to talk about that or have any questions about what the next step is going to be, because the activism that happened on Friday is not the last activism that's going to happen, because if we don't keep on going.
Absolutely.
I like to remind people that it wasn't any one rally that ended the Vietnam War, but all of those rallies together did. And it's not one time that we followed Governor Cuomo that stopped fracking in New York State. It was all those times put together, because if it happens only once, they ignore us. But if we're always there, they can't ignore us. They will try, and they'll try to pat you on the head and try to ignore you, but you just make it so they can't. We the time is running out. We can't do this. Anyway, 212-209-2877.
We have time for just a few listener phone calls.
A couple calls, but
please make them relevant to the talk, though.
And maybe the people who want to be relevant. I am amazed. I got 2 hours of phone calls on Friday, and nobody's calling right now. Isn't that a surprise?
We didn't alert them that we were going to be doing calls.
Yep. What were some of the other things you're talking? Decolonization. What is decolonization?
So decolonization is a project in answer to, obviously, colonization. And we know and we believe...
Colonization means a lot of different things
colonization,
to different people. So.
Yes. Okay. So colonization, I mean, that's such a big word to me. It really means the process of dispossession, disassociation, and really the effects of what we know as colonization in history and how that still exists today. It's very much alive today. It's the foundation of many of our policies that are still in effect.
Yeah, right.
And decolonization is basically an answer to colonization. Colonization has never changed. It's an ongoing, it's not an event. It's an ongoing project. We see it in racial injustice. We see it in gender inequality. We see it in the workplace. We see it at home. It's a part of our country's foundation. So we argue that the decolonization process is erasing binaries, respecting...
What does erasing binaries mean?
So I believe that, like, in a decolonized society, binaries like race... Well, I mean, to get technical, I think race is an imaginary project. I think it was built to divide during the process of colonization and of slavery, and by, you know, recognizing race more as, it's hard to put into words, like, we want to acknowledge the fact that labels aren't everything and that decolonization is equality. It's respecting one another and it's changing the laws of the land permanently. It's about reparations. It's about fair labor, it's about healthcare, it's about access. Decolonization is just the process of making injustice justice, if that makes sense.
And that would include things like the plantations for palm oil.
Of course.
That were created by slave labor.
Well, the cotton industry is like the foundation of our economy. So, you know, we think of it as American history, but it's present today. It's very much alive today. It's just changed its face. And that absolutely affects our climate and our environment. I mean, you look at like how land is destroyed in the Caribbean from the cotton industry and look at what they're dealing with today. I mean, yeah.
The environment is not just the air and the water. It's also the land.
Of course, everything starts with the land.
Everything is connected, and that's another beautiful part of a lot of the youth-oriented environmental groups is that they are much more into the connections of all the environmental issues.
Absolutely,
you've got the older groups that specialize. You know, this one specializes in birds. This one specializes in hiking. This one specializes in pipelines mm-hmm. only. This one specializes in fracking only, but not pipelines. This one specializes in nuclear power.
Right.
It's like one thing. And we go to school and we specialize in school. You know, you don't talk right. about history in English class. You don't talk about math in science class. So we do specialize from early on.
Which isn't bad. Not always.
It isn't necessarily bad.
As long as you connect the dots.
Exactly.
It's an interesting way of looking at the world, specialized. What's it mean? You know more and more about less and less.
Yeah.
my science background is oceanography, which was not a specialty science.
Mm.
It's a combination of chemical, biological, and physical throughout the curriculum.
Mm.
But that's not the way we normally do things. And so people can think of gay rights as separate from women's rights, as separate from immigrant rights, separate from black rights, separate from... And yet it's all human rights.
Exactly.
But we don't talk about human rights. We talk about a specific specialization of that. And it's about time we talk about human rights, period.
Exactly. And it's about time we talk about the rights of the planet.
Exactly. Period.
Well, you know, my friend Ludovica, who's also in Zero Hour with me, she said something at a UN side event that really resonated, which I think is true. She said that the 17 sustainable development goals are not as complicated as we think they are. Yes. They're human rights, they're environmental rights, they're absolutely attainable, and we know them to be true. We've always known them to be true. And I think it's good to focus on specific issues. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, honing in on what exactly needs to be done, you know, like fracking. But at the end of the day, we need to always bring it back to the bigger picture. We need to always, like you, like Donna said, connect the dots.
Well, thank you, Emily Dosso. We
thank
have
you.
Run out of time. So again, what's the website for Zero Hour?
So this is zerohournyc.com is our website. Feel free to email or call me, and we are so willing to hear from you and work with you.
Okay, and coming up now is Out FM, and Naomi is in the building. Hi, I'm Ken Gale of WBAI's Tuesday evening environmental show, Ecologic. One of the cool things about being a BAI buddy is that you get to decide what WBAI is worth to you. Are we worth more than your cable TV? Or 10 bucks a month? 20, 100, a million? Just go to the WBAI.org website and sign up with your credit card. You'll barely notice it. In return, you get a WBAI tote bag to show off, free or discounted entry to special WBAI events, and other perks. Another cool thing about being a BAI buddy is less fundraising interruptions to your favorite programs. Go to WBAI.org. You can donate in the name of your favorite show, like Ecologic.
The 2019 local station board elections are underway. If you donated a minimum of $25 or volunteered 3 hours between July 1st, 2018 and June 30th, 2019, you should have received either an email ballot, a postcard, or paper ballot. If you haven't, then fill out a ballot request form on elections.pacifica.org. Members without access to the internet can leave a voicemail for the election supervisor at